Austin Film Festival is pleased to announce the 12th Annual Film and Food Party at the glamorous and historic Driscoll Hotel. Celebrate the arts with specialty cocktails and innovative cuisine presented by some of Austin's most notable chefs. Proceeds from the event will benefit Austin Film Festival's OnStory project, encompassing our PBS show, book, podcast, and our Young Filmmakers program. A ticket to the Film and Food Party is a great compliment to an Austin Film Festival badge. For more info, go to austinfilmfestival.com. Love the OnStory podcasts? Pick up a copy of the OnStory book today for advice and inspiration from today's leading filmmakers. OnStory, Screenwriters and Their Craft, is a must-read for all screenwriters and film fans. Find it in Amazon or at austinfilmfestival.com. And if you want more OnStory, watch, listen, and read at onstory.tv or visit us for OnStory panels live at the 21st Annual Austin Film Festival and Conference this October. Confirmed panelists include Extraordinary Contribution to Television awardee Matthew Weiner, True Detective's Cary Fukunaga, and more. Badges and passes at austinfilmfestival.com. Austin Film Festival's OnStory podcast is presented by Final Draft, the industry standard number one selling screenwriting software in the world, with over 100 templates that format and paginate screenplays, teleplays, and stage plays. For more info, go to finaldraft.com. Today, on Austin Film Festival's OnStory podcast, The Writer-Director with Steve Zalian.
Novelists start at the beginning and screenwriters start at the end.
And the late, great Paul Mazursky.
If you really, really, really want to protect what you've written in a way that's so deeply important to you, if you can, you should direct it.
Steve Zalian is responsible for the screenplays to a large number of great films, including Awakenings, Schindler's List, The Gangs of New York, and Moneyball. As a writer-director, he's given us the films Searching for Bobby Fischer, A Civil Action, and All the King's Men. Actor, writer, director Paul Mazursky passed away in June. His career spanned more than 50 years with over 200 film credits. He was nominated for an Academy Award 5 times, including once for Best Picture in 1978 for his film An Unmarried Woman, which he wrote and directed. We were fortunate to have him on hand way back in 2000, where we honored him with the Distinguished Screenwriter Award at the 7th Austin Film Festival, and where he sat down with Steve Zalian for this panel. Paul Mazursky and Steve Zalian opened this episode discussing the pleasures and perils of writing and directing.
I've read a lot of scripts, Steve, over the years that I've been offered, and I've turned down a few probably that I shouldn't have, but I was busy writing. And as you know, you get to be afraid if you're writing that if I don't finish it, I never will. Mm-hmm. I was writing Next Stop Greenwich Village when I got a call that they were interested in me to do All the President's Men. And I read it and thought it was great, but I said, but I got to finish, blah, 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 and I didn't do it. Yeah. So it's probably a mistake, but that's life. Yeah. But I didn't. Once I've made up my mind in the two cases that I did, I didn't have to sit with it for too long. I just talked to the writer as much as I could. That was not hard in terms of talking to the writer.
I've been given scripts, to direct that other people have written, and I can't begin to imagine how to do it. You know, it's sort of like I would have to probably sit down and transcribe it, scene for scene, word for word, just to sort of get the feel of it. I'm impressed by directors who can, come in and do it without a lot of
I've only done it twice. Yeah. And if you ever get the opportunity, call me and I'll sit with you in a room and tell you what I did. But who knows? Look, it's frightening in any case.
Yeah.
The whole thing. It's like a nightmare because you got 100 people calling you boss. Which is nerve-wracking, except when I made Moscow on the Hudson, which I directed in Munich. Most of it was done in Munich, and they didn't call me boss. They called me Mein Führer. That's the truth. So I said, fellas, you can't call me Führer. I'm Jewish. And they said, yes, but Paul, you are still a Führer. Anyway.
I can't write it if I can't see it. And so I go through the process of directing it on paper anyway, whether it's somebody else that's going to end up directing it or if it's me. So it's exactly the same.
When you wrote Schindler's List, which I thought was brilliant, of course you had a book. So the book makes it a little easier in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. I had that with the Enemies of Love story.
Yeah, you can depend on certain things that you're pretty sure work because you've seen that work before.
Then you're in awe a bit of the responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to screw it up.
There are people around me, as I'm sure there are people around you, Steve, I guess there are, who I trust, who are working with me, who I talk to a lot. You know, a lot. Very collaborative.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big struggle now between the Writers Guild and the Directors Guild about the possessory credits and this and that and the other. I, for one, have never had any trouble with any of the people I've collaborated with. And they've been wonderful, and we're very close. You talk to them the way you would talk to your closest person. What about X? What about Y? What about, you think she's right for it, do you think? But in terms of judging myself and saying, well, somebody else could have done a better job, I don't think so, because they're just things that I thought I had a vision of.
I kind of go back and forth. I mean, I can't find the, you know, the endurance and the energy to direct movies over and over and over. It takes too much out of me. So
it's hard.
What I do is a pattern is starting, just starting, which is to direct something and then write a couple of things for other people and then direct something else. And when I know I'm writing for somebody else, I don't write it any differently. But I don't have trouble letting it go either. And I find that when you do let something go, you should let it go completely and don't try to be involved, you know, part way in the process, because it's frustrating. So I don't hang around on sets and, you know, stand by monitors and try to second guess what the director's doing. You know, I try not to look at anything, dailies, anything, and be surprised by it at the end of the process.
Well, I'd like to bring you to the DGA for one of our meetings.
Yeah. No, it is frustrating because you're so close to it and you think your opinion is important, but you also know, having directed something, that the thing's moving too quickly to really allow you to have any meaningful contribution to make on the set. So I try to stay away.
Very well said.
Working with writers and life on the set.
Well, in my case, it's been more like Jim Carrey and Me, Myself, and Irene. You know, I tell myself, you're a schmuck, you shouldn't do that. In the two things I did that I didn't write, I would make no change without telephoning, calling, meeting with, having a discussion with, or something with the writer, ever. But in the heat of shooting, you get there on the day, if somebody can't say, gee whiz, let's go to the movies, and they prefer to say, you know, I want to go to the movies, let them say it. I'm not going to fight that. So the writers I've worked with don't care about that.
Yeah.
They just don't. I mean, it can get banal. I remember I directed Woody Allen, and Woody was the same way I would just describe it. I was. He would be with me. He would say, on page 83, I have a problem. Do you mind if I don't say, oh, my? And said, I just want to say the line, but not, oh, my. I said, great. And then, but I would say, if you have anything else you want to say, Woody, say it. Because he's brilliant. What happens if the director ruins what you're saying or you don't agree with it? You know, you got to take that chance at some point, I think. Once you sell a script, it's what Steve said. It's
you know, it's always a calculated risk, and if you can't deal with it, you know, you could write a book and then not sell it to Hollywood. That'd be about the only thing
exactly.
You could do.
I read a script last week that I liked a lot that I didn't write that I'm interested in doing, and I have a couple of places that I would like to talk to the writer about. Mm-hmm. I've never met the writer, and I've never met the producer. It was sent to me. So I will go through that process and say directly, how do you feel about A and B? Best I can do.
I mean, what Paul is saying, I think, is the key. And he obviously shows the writer respect. And that's the main thing that a writer wants from a director is respect, as does everybody else who works on a movie. I think what happens is if a director doesn't show, you know, the appropriate amount of respect, you know, then you have problems. I mean, I had a director who happened to be a writer who said to me when I was just discussing a point with him, I wasn't refusing to see his point of view, I was just discussing it, he got frustrated and said, you know what, I'm a writer too. If you won't do it, I'll do it. And that's crossing the line, you know.
Yeah.
Once you do that, you'll lose a writer, you know. As soon as they're going to shoot it, it's not mine anymore. I'm not going to hang around and, you know, wring my hands.
Leon Kapitanis wrote four scripts with me. Moscow on the Hudson, Tempest, Moon Over Parador, Down and Out in Beverly Hills. I invited him to the set anytime he wanted to. Every day, he never came. ever, for those reasons.
Yeah.
He knew that he wouldn't agree 100% with everything. He just didn't want to. But respect, he has my total respect. Look, writing from the blank page is probably the most difficult step in the entire process. But you can't get away from the fact that in the end, a script is a blueprint for a movie. It's everything, but then it becomes something more. And it's difficult for writers, but how can you not respect them? And I've always said the same thing at these terrible meetings I go to, because I'm in the Writers Guild too. If you really, really, really want to protect what you've written in a way that's so deeply important to you, if you can, you should direct it. That's all.
And there are lots of stories of people doing that, where they've written something that they refuse to let it go. You know, they turn down the money, and they keep it because they want to protect it.
Yeah, but just if you can, try to direct it yourself. Yeah. And get there at 6 o'clock and stay till 10 at night. You know, I've acted in a lot of things, so I've had an opportunity as an actor to watch behavior on sets. And some of it's five producers with five monitors watching the shots as they are done and having those sighs that Gore had. I mean it. Oh, gee. And then the actors turning and looking quickly, who sighed, who did what. It's hard. So you have to be a dictator. They were right in Munich.
Paul Mazursky and Steve Zalian describe their respective writing processes, thoughts on structure, casting, and their experiences in the ever-changing landscape of Hollywood filmmaking.
The process has always been the same for me, but it takes longer each time. And I know that with most things you get, you know, the better you get at it, the quicker it is. With writing, I think the better you get, the more you realize what you don't know, and the more self-conscious you get, and the more you don't want to repeat yourself. And there's all these things that come into play, so the process gets longer. But it is the same, and it is for me to go into the office every day. You know, I take my kids to school at 8 o'clock. I go in at 8:30. I knock off at around 4 or 5 if it's going badly, and I'll stay later if it's going well. And usually it's about, for me, 2-3 months of making notes and working up the nerve to write the script, and then even longer sometimes. It gets longer each time. Maybe 6 months of that. And then writing the script actually goes pretty quickly, a month or two.
I play a lot of solitaire now.
Computer solitaire?
Computer solitaire, yeah. Just fabulous. I'm really good. I have everything. Yeah. I've worked in different ways, but basically I don't start to write until I feel confident that I'm going to write every day. That means there's no guarantee that I will actually write every day, but I don't say fade in until I've thought about it for a long time. In almost every instance, not every, I'll tell you a couple of non-instances. And then I will go in for about 4 hours. Now, I don't do it as long as Steve. Sometimes you get a page, sometimes you get nothing. Sometimes you get 5 pages. It's not something the next day you begin and you throw out the whole thing. There's no rules or regulations. I've written about six or seven scripts alone, and that's a little different than collaborating. So collaborating is an enormous amount of discussion, the kind of discussion you probably have with yourself, mm-hmm. where we're talking and meeting and having coffee at the farmer's market or somewhere, and just talking and driving around and some research, and finally one of us will begin to write, and I'll read the pages. It's usually the other one will start to write. And sometimes I do. When I've written myself, a couple of times I had like miracle things where I had no idea what I was doing, and I started to write, and I got lucky.
You know, someone said, I wish I could remember who it was because it was kind of smart, was that novelists start at the beginning and screenwriters start at the end. And and if you, I found that very helpful because I realized that I got into trouble when I didn't know where something was going. And so now I never start until I'm pretty sure I know where it's going to end up.
You know the ending, yeah.
You know,
I think
and then you can start doing things along the way that will make it inevitable that that's where you have to end up.
Right.
But it was, that was, you know, that takes a long time. And then the beginning actually can start almost anywhere. I find I try to start it as late as I possibly can in the story. The temptation is always to start it too soon, too early, introducing characters and getting things ready, because you're still thinking about it. And normally I throw out the first 10, 20
and
pages.
And isn't it different with a, again, with a source than with a light bulb that comes off?
Well, the ending, I guess, is pretty much there.
Yeah.
But not the beginning and not the getting there a lot of the times,
no.
You know. An ending doesn't necessarily take place right at the end. I mean, an ending is the philosophical ending is the same. I mean, even the action is the same. It's just, you know, is there another 20 pages of wrap-up or not, you know? Is there an epilogue or not? I mean, I see it over, I see it edited. I mean, I see it sitting in the theater. I mean, I see it in two dimensions sometimes. I mean, I really try to describe what I see. And I find if I try to describe what I see, it's more than likely it'll be conveyed to the reader, you know, that they'll have a better chance of seeing it too. I couldn't do it otherwise. I just wouldn't know how to.
Well, as I say, most of the things I directed, I wrote knowing I was going to direct it. So I wrote very little stage directions. I just write dialogue and a location. I never wrote zoom in. It was a warm summer day. What a wonderful feeling. No, but I mean, look, we're trying to sell scripts to basically subhuman people. And it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse. You know, it's gotten worse, whereas you don't really know if a committee is reading it. You know, a real committee. It's a committee. You don't know who's reading it. I used to, in the old days, the good old days, I would talk to Alan Ladd Jr. and I'd say, I want to do a movie about an unmarried woman who ends up not going off with the guy. That's all I said. He said, it's a deal. But today, that would be, it's out of the question. You'd have to draw them diagrams, holistic, you know, three-dimensional, virtual reality. I don't know.
Well, she'd have to go off with the guy, too.
You know. She would go off with the guy. No, sure. Me too. It's different. I mean, but I don't think there's any rules or regulations. I mean, yes, I visualize what the thing's going. By the time I'm getting ready to shoot it, I have a pretty good idea. You know, Steve and I, when you say you're writing it so that the director will really get it.
Yeah, but I don't say, you know, wide shot.
Right,
I don't
exactly.
say that, but I might say something like, you know, the guy can just barely be seen.
Okay.
You know, I might
but
do that.
But that's good.
You know.
That's good.
So it's not too obnoxious,
yeah,
but at the same time you plant an image, you know.
It's just when you're reading zoom in, tight shot, mm-hmm. tracking along rapidly, bada boom, bang, boom, bang, boom. It's
But when you say, like, you know, interior living room, aren't you picturing a certain living room in your life?
I definitely am, yeah. But I knew that the people I was writing it for were, they didn't have to be sold that much.
No, absolutely.
That was about it. And I don't pretend to be Bergman, but if you read Bergman's scripts, their dialogue with a little, Erloff had a headache. Lena was at the sink washing the dishes. Anything the matter? No, Erloff. Where's the dog? I don't know. It's outside. Ah, what's the matter? Nothing. Do you have a headache? No. But he doesn't say tight, close. I think I'll do that movie. It's about all I've got right now. No, I don't think of movie stars. I just think of people that I've met or know or imagine. But I've never, I don't really. But as soon as you are getting close, in my experience, and you begin to have discussions with the people who might actually be giving you money, you begin to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. And you there's no point in starting with a name they never heard of, you know. So you say, even if it's wrong, you say, well, for the James Bond part, I'm thinking of Barbara Streisand. You know, I think she'd be great. I really do. But isn't she? So what?
Well, when I'm writing, though, I don't imagine. You know, you have those battles once the thing is done. I mean, I don't imagine actors when I'm writing. I imagine real people.
Right.
You know. And and also, so many actors can play the same part, and you know, it changes. It has a different feel with each different actor you imagine. It's a kind of amazing process of, of making the decision. You know?
It's kind of a trap, because if you start too much with a known actor in mind, you're bound for disappointments. You know, oh yeah, well, he won't be available for 3 years. And then you start going down the list till you reach other people. Otherwise, you never get a movie made.
Yeah.
But there have been actors I desperately wanted early on. And that's another story.
Yeah.
Well, a woman came to see a friend of my wife's and mine, a very good friend. She was about 42, and she had been divorced for about 5 years. Very bright. And she came to our home very proud. She had just bought a house, and on the deed of sale it had her name, and next to it said an unmarried woman. And it shocked me. And I had one of those epiphanies, you know, where I said, does it say an unmarried man? I checked it out. No, only an unmarried woman. So I started interviewing women who had been divorced in the last 5 years or so, and I made up that movie. That was about it.
Terrific.
That was a lot of fun to do. I wrote that myself. Thank you. And by the way, in terms of casting, I'll make this real quick, because it's not a lecture about what I've done. The first person I gave it to was Jane Fonda. And Jane Fonda called me back and said, there's no politics in it. I want to do a political film. I said, Jane, I knew her pretty well. I said, Jane, this is the most political film you'll ever do. It's about women, for once, being able to be on their own. It's blah, 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 all that stuff. When she saw the movie, she came up to me in a parking lot and put her arms around me and apologized. I said, you don't have to apologize. The second person I offered it to was Barbara Streisand. Yeah, I don't think she got it. And then I saw Jill Clayburgh in, of all things, Gable and Lombard. And I liked her. She was a little young, so I met her. And then I saw her in another thing called, she played a hooker in something on TV. And I met her, talked to her, and I just fell in love with her. And Alan Ladd had the courage to say fine. Because she was, compared to, you know, Jane Fonda and Barbara Streisand. So you never know what's going to happen. I mean, yeah. Unmarried Woman cost, in 1978, $2.4 million. Now, today that would be maybe 12 or something like that, but it wouldn't be 50.
Right.
You know, I read an article 2 days ago in L.A. saying that Cameron Crowe is very upset that they didn't sell his movie well.
Right.
It cost $60 million. That's a lot of money.
I know.
But when you, in those days, almost all the movies I made up until Tempest cost $2 million. And then the system changed radically. And the more expensive it's gotten, it is produced now, I think, a very healthy reaction in that people are starting to do bizarre and interesting things in digital.
Right.
And they're going out and making, I should probably be doing that, because I've had a lot of trouble getting a movie made in the last couple of years that I won't like to make, a couple of them. And I'm not quite there that I can do this thing, go out for $140,000 and do it. It's hard to unlearn the old habits. But in those days, it was the good old days. There were about 10 executives who would just sort of trust you. That's it. Look, Harry and Tonto was about an old man and a cat.
Yeah.
It was turned down about 20 times. One guy said to me, reminds me of my father. I don't want to see my father in a movie. And I said, yeah, what about the cat? You know? He said, Dad, but it's too sentimental. I said, let me ask you a question. What if, when he goes cross-country, because he takes a cross-country trip in the movie, Art Carney with the cat, What if the cat's got cocaine in it that he's taking across? She said, I'll do a picture. He meant it.
It takes me longer and longer to commit to a project because, I know how long it takes, and you get scared, and you know, like you're saying, you used to just jump into it and you'd think about it later. I find that I take more and more time to think, you know, to commit to something. But once I do, I'm pretty sure that it was a good idea. And I'm stunned when people don't agree with me. You know, I'm really shocked because I wouldn't say to them, I wouldn't try to trick them. You know, I'm not going to them and saying, I think you should do this and we're all going to lose a lot of money. I mean, I really think that it's good and that should count for something. And I'm finding out that it doesn't, you know, unless so-and-so is in it or unless you can make it for X dollars or, you know, it's always about something else other than what it is. Right. And that's kind of a shock, you know. And then you think, well, what if I was just like starting out? It'd be impossible. I mean, at least I know some people that I can go to and talk to about it. So it's, yeah, I think there's sort of a magic period in there where everything, you know, you're doing things and you're doing them quickly and, you know, the stars are aligned. And then when it doesn't, you know, when it stops, it's a rude awakening. Things are getting worse and they're getting better at the same time. I mean, I think with the independent films, there's so many more small films being made than there were 10, 15 years ago. So I think that's where everybody's coming from. I think that writers, writers can now actually make their film rather than trying to shop their script around. They can shop their film around, and that's something that they couldn't do 5 years ago, probably. So I think there's a lot more opportunity out there. I'm like Paul. I wish I could figure out how you do that because I'd like to do it too. I'd like to make a film for $100,000. I don't know how you do it, but it sounds really good.
I mean, writing is like, you know, in the old days, the writer was like some slave in a little room, you know, at one of the studios, and they'd be able to watch, see what time the lights went out. There's a lot of stories, a lot of good books about it.
Several first drafts and writing Schindler's List.
When I think it's done, I usually do another draft or two. And so I can say that I did it because I know they're going to ask for it anyway. And when they do, I can say, well, I already did that. So, you know, it's...
You don't tell them?
I don't tell them. You know, sometimes I'll put a little, you know, it'll say first draft and there'll be a parenthesis 4, you know. And that means it's really the fourth draft. I'm calling it the first draft, but it's the fourth draft. And I've really done the work. And, you know, so don't come back and try to get me to do it again for free. But that's exactly what's happening now as I'm doing it for free.
You end up.
It didn't work, and I have a 7 in the thing. Well, I wrote the first draft of the script without any input from him whatsoever. I didn't even meet him until after the first draft was done. So in terms of the structure, it was there, and it stayed there for the rest of the time. What we did together then was there were a lot of things that he missed, you know, a lot of scenes and a lot of characters. So it was a matter of just making the script longer and longer and longer. But still, in the middle of it was this very straightforward story, you know, that I felt very strongly about that it had to be there or it wasn't going to work. You know, then the finished film was scaled back down and almost came back down to where we started. But it was a nice process to go through because there are moments, little moments along the way that you can only get by kind of overdoing it, by writing everything and then taking most of it back out again, but you still have a lot of kind of little nice moments.
Kind of wonderful of him to not give you input at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
No, it's just
that's
total
shot.
Freedom. And
I like to do that with editors.
Yeah, same thing.
I don't say anything.
Exactly. I was there for 10 days at the beginning, and then I left. And it was the same thing. So when I saw it, I was seeing everything for the first time. You know, and I was stunned. I mean, I was kind of stunned by the visual interpretation of what I had written and knowing that I couldn't do it and being really, you know, feeling a lot of gratitude for it. And that every scene, I mean, this is what you're saying about how good he is. Every scene has a visual idea in it, and he seems to come up with it effortlessly. I mean, I don't know if it's true, but he does it very quickly and simply, and if it's not perfect, that's okay. Let's move on to the next thing. And every scene has a very clear visual idea. I remember one discussion we had about the villain. And I didn't even want to talk about, quote, the villain, because I thought the Holocaust was the villain, and I didn't want to talk about it as a person. And And we had long talks about that, and you know, we left things the way they were.
We close with directing, Hollywood money, and a great idea for a movie.
Everyone's different. You spent a certain amount of time before you ever get to the set with the production designer, finding locations, which makes it real, and then trying to figure out approaches to shooting. And some directors figure out in great detail, make a shot list. I'm going to get a wide shot of this place from here. I'm going to get one from behind the two of us. I'll get a shot looking towards us. I'll get tighter shots. I'll get close-ups of various people in the place. I'll get a shot of a cat sleeping. I'll get an exterior shot of the building. I don't know. You make up something and you do it. And I think there are other directors who may have a plan but don't tell it to anybody until they get there. I mean, there's no rules.
It was not my plan or my goal to direct movies. It was just I wrote something, I didn't like the way it turned out, and so I actually tried to make the same movie again. I mean, a version of the same movie again, and do it myself. You know, so in my case, yeah, it was true. I think I'm lucky because so people will hire me to do scripts for other people, so I can go back and forth, and it suits me. It suits my lifestyle. Because I don't like to get up at 6 every day of my life. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's so hard to direct movies that, when I'm done doing it, I like to take a year or two off and do something else. And writing is something that I can, you know, that I can still work and survive. In my case, I was working with Conrad Hall, who's, you know, probably one of the very small handful of great cinematographers out there, since it was my first film, I was a little over-prepared. I felt I needed to be, and I showed up with shot lists and little drawings and things, he just kind of, you know, sort of nodded his head, and yeah, okay, we'll do that, and gradually he taught me how to trust sort of that the film would take on its own visual style if you gave it a chance, and not to be overprepared. So we would not even discuss how to shoot a scene until after we'd seen a rehearsal. And Conrad would sit in a chair, whatever chair was available on the set, and he would sit there and he'd watch it from there, and he'd say afterwards, "I think it looks pretty good from here." And it didn't matter where that chair was. It was like, you know, he could see it from any side of the room. I appreciate the lesson that he taught me. So I have a lot of fun with the idea of showing up, not totally unprepared, but available for things to happen always. I mean, don't you know? No, seriously, I mean, I know what scenes are good and I know what scenes aren't good right from the beginning, and I can never quite get the scenes that aren't good really good. I can get them better, but they never quite make it, and the ones that are good, or those sections of the story that are good, stay good, you know? So I'm always aware of what's working and what's not, because I felt it when I was writing it, and I trust the feeling, I guess.
Do I think actors are overpaid? Well, almost everybody in the big league part of it is paid an awful lot of money. I don't know. It's a hard question for me to answer. I think it's kind of absurd, and you know, for a guy to get $20 million to act in a movie when I'd be happy to do 4 movies for $20 million is a pain in the neck. But I've been around too long to think that there's kind of a justice and all that. It's like ball players. Shaq just signed for $88 million. If they want to pay a guy $20 and he can get it, let him get it. I don't care. They're interested in big hits. That's the thing. They want to grab the brass ring. You know, the basic rule that's out there, unfortunately, is if you go to them and say, "Look, I'm going to make you a work of art, a magnificent film that will move people, that's socially conscious, even entertaining. It's a beautiful film. It has every chance of making $12 million. And the other guy says, "I'm going to make this action-adventure film that I'm calling it Turd, because that's what it's about. I think it'll open at 27 and make 150. Let's do Turd." That's the way it is. So you go in when you pitch, you don't say, I'm going to make, you lean towards, I might even be making turd, you know, if you're lucky.
Austin Film Festival's On Story podcast is brought to you by Austin Film Festival, the City of Austin Cultural Arts Division, the Texas Commission of the Arts, and is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Institute of Museum and Library Services and the Texas Library and Archives Commission. Our executive producer is Barbara Morgan. Today's podcast was produced and edited by Brian Ramos. For more information on the podcast, On Story the television show, and Austin Film Festival, go to onstory.tv or austinfilmfestival.com.